Let me just indicate the this is the last week of Senate action before the recess. It's planned to be. We're working on the agriculture appropriation bill on the Senate floor right now, and we hope to complete action on that. Obviously, we'll also have a lot of pressure to go ahead and take some action on the so-called cash for clunkers legislation that the House passed last week to put more funds into that program and see whether we make some changes in the program in the process. In addition to those two issues, we will be voting on Judge Sotomayor, her nomination to go on to the Supreme Court. That will be probably the last vote we cast sometime Thursday or Friday. So those are the three main things. In addition to that, we're continuing to have a lot of meetings with regard to healthcare reform to try to come to some agreement on a bill we could report out of the Finance Committee on that subject. Why don't I just stop with that and go right down the line here. Jim, are you there?
Yes. Good afternoon, Senator. How are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. Let me go to that cash for clunkers program. I want to just ask you, you have said that you are concerned about how the House wants to fund a $2 billion extension of that program using renewable energy loan money. But where else could you get the money for an extension, and should an extension happen in your mind?
Well, I think that funds could be obtained, I believe, from the TARP funding that was earlier provided to the administration. At least I think they should explore that and see if it's possible to use funds out of that source. I do think there's a problem with taking the funds out of the Energy Loan Guarantee Program. Those are the funds that are needed in order to go ahead with the renewable energy projects, the wind and solar projects that many developers are trying to get up and running at this time. So I hope we can avoid taking the funds from that purpose. I do think that the program is helping to stimulate economic activity around the country, and for that reason, I would expect to support putting some additional funds into it. I do think we need to, though, be aware that this is not any kind of long-term solution to any environmental problem we have or even any economic problem we have. So I think after this this currently proposed infusion of funds, I think probably at that point the program should be allowed to expire. That would be my current judgment on it.
A quick follow-up there. You just were talking about the environmental impact of a program like this. My understanding was that this cash for clunkers program was designed to help get some less fuel-efficient autos off the road. Isn't that true?
Well, that is true, but it's has pretty weak provisions to accomplish that. I think you can turn in vehicles that have less than 18 miles per gallon and have to demonstrate some improved miles per gallon in the new vehicle that you purchase, but it's not a major step up. I think there have been proposals, and I've supported proposals, to require that the new vehicles purchased have a higher fuel efficiency than is currently required in the law.
All right. Thanks much.
Uh-huh. Bill Dupuy?
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
Let me ask, where do things stand now in the Finance Committee on health care reform?
Well, things are still in a stage where we're trying to see if a bill could be developed that would gain bipartisan support in that we could report it out of the committee on a bipartisan basis. That's what Senator Baucus, who's the chairman of the committee, has been trying to do. And I think his purpose, which he's explained many times, is that we're going to have 60 votes on the Senate floor in order to proceed to a bill in this area and in order to pass a bill in this area. And having some bipartisan support for that legislation as we begin the debate on the Senate floor would be a big help.
We've been reading that you are among a group of six senators on the Finance Committee who've been meeting behind closed doors to try to work out something that may fly before the entire committee. Such small meetings, is that usual for a Senate committee?
Well, it's not usual, and the process is to develop a proposal to then put before the full committee. And at that time, of course, all members of the full committee were having meetings with other members of the committee as we have these smaller meetings as well. But once a proposal is put before the full committee, then there would be an opportunity for all members to offer amendments, state objections, offer alternatives, whatever action the full committee wanted to take. But the hoped for end result would be a bill that would have some bipartisan support coming out of the committee.
So there have been other small groups meeting independently from your group?
Yes, I think some of the Republican members in the small group of six have been meeting with Republican senators. I and Senator Baucus and Senator Conrad have met with the Democratic senators on the committee repeatedly, and that will continue, those kinds of meetings. And we have also discussions with the larger members of the Senate. We have a full briefing for all Democratic members of the Senate on both the bill that came out of the Health and Education Committee and the state of discussions in the Finance Committee. That'll be this Wednesday.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Marco, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Senator. Can you talk to me about this Columbus Port of Entry funding and how that fits into plans to attract more business, specifically international business with Mexico, to the southern New Mexico region?
Yes, this is $2.339 million that was released last week from the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funding. This is to do planning and design associated with rebuilding the Columbus Port of Entry. The funding is going to make it possible to go ahead with the first phase of construction on the Port of Entry. There's been a lot of increased traffic, commercial traffic and commuter traffic between Columbus and Palomas over the last few years. And I think everyone's agreed that upgrading that port of entry is essential. So this funding that is part of the stimulus package we passed earlier this year will help to make that port of entry more attractive for traffic going to and from Mexico, and hopefully will increase security along the border as well.
Okay, now how else do you, are there other plans to bring further business and bring more traffic to this region and attract more companies to this area? I know there's been talk of bringing the rail system through this area. Can you talk to me about those?
Yeah, there's a long-term plan to build a multimodal facility. Transportation facility down in southern Doñana County near Santa Teresa. And of course, we also have requests in to see if we can improve the infrastructure there at Santa Teresa so that more traffic can go back and forth across there as well. We believe that in the next year or so, we'll see a real need for additional lanes of traffic coming and going in and out of Mexico at Santa Teresa, and we've requested that Homeland Security provide for that.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Uh-huh. Jim, we're back to you.
Okay, thanks. Going back to health care here, Representative Dennis Kucinich has an amendment that got into the House bill on the health care overhaul that would permit states the power to introduce single-payer health care systems. It apparently drew bipartisan support in the House by uniting proponents of single-payer health care with states' rights advocates. I want to ask you what your thought is on Kucinich's amendment and if you would support it when and if it comes into the Senate.
I frankly haven't seen his amendment. There was an amendment offered when we We're developing the health care legislation we reported out of the Health and Education Committee here in the Senate that would have provided an option for states to pursue single payer. I did not support that because it contemplated taking funds that are currently going to provide Medicare services to seniors and taking those funds and instead turning those over to the state to use in a alternative health care arrangement. I didn't think that would be acceptable to many of the Medicare recipients in our state, so I think they have to find some other way to fund a single-payer program other than using Medicare funds, and so I did not support the proposal in the Senate. I don't know what Congressman Kucinich has offered in the House and whether it had that same problem or not.
My understanding is that the amendment is not connected to funding. It simply is connected to allowing states to introduce single-payer health care systems.
Well, if that were the case, I certainly have no problem with states going ahead with single-payer systems if as long as the funds have been arranged for or can be obtained by the state.
Senator, is a public option simply off the table in the Senate now?
Well, I don't think it's off the table by any means. There's a lot of discussion and debate going on. As far as I'm aware, though, we don't have a single Republican. There are 40 Republicans in the Senate. We don't have a single Republican who's indicated they would support a public option. And I believe there are two or three Democrats who have indicated that they have concerns about supporting a public option as well. I have strongly supported a public option helped develop the public option that we included in the bill that came out of the Health and Education Committee. But whether we could get the votes to actually proceed on the Senate floor with something that contained a public option, I don't know.
There are 60 Democrats in the Senate. Is it possible to put some pressure on them, do you think, to be able to get enough support to not have to worry about a filibuster?
Well, I think clearly there's a lot of pressure on everybody in the Senate and in the House of Representatives on this issue and several issues connected with health care. As I say, I think discussion's going on, continues to go on. That's as it should, and I would hope that some of the groups that are particularly strongly supporting a public option would also be talking to Republican members of the Senate.
Okay, thanks.
Bill, are you still there?
Yes, I am. The question I raise now is a state issue in New Mexico at the moment, but it's not unique to New Mexico and could come up increasingly and bear on the widespread use of solar and wind-powered electricity generation. And the question is this. Should a small company that is being set up to serve one client, as is the case with the city of Santa Fe, should it be exempt from the same rules that govern a giant utility like PNM when it comes to being regulated under state regulatory rules? There's a group of lawmakers in New Mexico arguing that would place an unfair burden on this company and would thwart the widespread growth of solar power. Any thoughts on that? And whether, if it becomes rampant enough, widespread enough throughout the country, whether this sort of question might be answered federally?
Well, I think historically we've always allowed the rate regulation to be done at the state level. And so what a utility charges for electric power generated from whatever source is a state decision. The Public Regulation Commission in our state makes that decision, and a similar body does in each state around the country. I do think that there are differences in the rules they apply depending upon the size of the utility, and the requirement for utilities to produce a certain percentage of their power from renewable sources generally applies. That requirement applies to larger utilities and not small companies. So I don't know if that's exactly responsive to your question, but there are different regulations depending upon the size of the utility involved.
Well, this utility company would be solar-powered. Its single client would be the city of Santa Fe in this particular instance, but it would not be efficient, I understand, if it had to pay the same same fees and under the regulatory framework that guides a large utility.
Well, as I say, I think the Public Regulation Commission certainly can make make accommodation for that and can put in place a different set of requirements depending upon the nature and the function and the size of the utility that they're dealing with.
Okay, thanks.
Marco, did you have another question?
Sure, Senator. Can you do you have any updates on the severe drought funding request for farmers in southeastern New Mexico? I know it's been a while since we mentioned that, but I don't know if you have any updates on that.
I don't really have anything to tell you today. We can check into it and try to let you know, but I don't have any news on how that's being considered.
Okay, so no word yet from any federal officials. Okay. All right, thank you, Senator.
Uh-huh. Jim, did you have another question?
I do, Senator, one more, and that is there are some noises being made now about the potential for middle-class tax increases. Both Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner and National Economic Council Director Lawrence Summers said yesterday that middle-class tax increases may be necessary, and on the one hand to reduce budget deficits, on the other potentially to pay for the health care system overhaul. These are two high-level Obama administration officials talking about middle-class tax increase potential. What's your feeling on that? Do you think that's a possibility? Would you support it if it came around?
Well, I don't think you're likely to see any kind of tax increases on the middle class as part of in the next year or two as we're trying to get out of this deficit. I mean, out of this recessionary circumstance we find ourselves in. So I don't think there will be any kind of a tax increase during that period. After that, the only proposals that I've been aware of here in the Senate related to health care, the funding of health care, have talked about perhaps putting a tax on the Cadillac insurance policies that companies are issuing in some cases. We've tried to look at the details of that, and there are very, very few people in New Mexico who have any policies that would qualify as so-called Cadillac plans. So that would not be a tax that would affect us in New Mexico if it did happen, and if it did happen, it would be several years down the road.
What's your feeling on the Senate's, the broader Senate's support for taxing those Cadillac plans, and then specifically the Senate Finance Committee as well?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, nobody wants to tax anything, but there are two advantages of putting a tax on the insurance companies issuing Cadillac plans, and these would be taxes on the insurance companies. Both you raise some revenue that can then be used to otherwise reform health care, but you also have the effect of dampening some of the overutilization of the health care system that is encouraged by not having any kind of tax on those Cadillac plans. So we're told by the Congressional Budget Office that if you want to reduce the growth in health care costs over the long term, something like that kind of a tax on Cadillac plans would be helpful.
And how much money could be raised by taxing those plans?
Well, it all depends on how rich the plans have to be before they're subject to a tax, and none of that's been decided.
All right, great. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Bill, did you have another question?
That's it for me. Thanks, Senator.
Okay, thank you. Marco, did you have another question?
No, Senator, I don't.
Okay. Jim, do you have anything else?
I'm all done. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you all for visiting with me. Bye-bye.